Hello.
Hello, is that the Tooth Fairy, mate? It's Alex.
Oh, hello, Alex, mate. How are you?
I'm good, dude. How are you? It's been ages since we last spoke.
Yeah, no, I'm fine. Well, to be honest, I'm not quite fine. Things are a bit tough at the moment.
Oh, mate, well, what's wrong, like?
Well, you know, just financially, really.
Oh, what, the recession, everything's been getting everyone down, hasn't it?
No, like, not like that. No, don't be daft. I'm an existential being. I live in my own plane. Me, Santa, Easter Bunny. We don't need to worry about money.
That's, I suppose, not
a problem for common folk.
Well, surely you've got to live somehow, though.
No, but I've got my own economy, haven't I? Tooth Fairy. You know my business. I go into Kitty's house, get the teeth, leave him some cash.
That's true.
Problem is, who the f*** wants teeth? No one wants them. Can't shift them.
Yeah.
Got a clock full of teeth. Go out into the market and say, anyone wants some teeth? Everyone just looks at me like I'm a f***ing weirdo.
Oh, mate.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, well,
what are you doing with all those kids' teeth? You freak. And I'm like, well, I'm Tooth Fairy. And they look at me like, oh, yeah, of course you are, mate. No, I really am. I've got a clock and the little wings and I can come in your room and take your teeth.
Oh, mate, I feel bad.
I don't know what to do.
I feel bad for you.
No, it's a nightmare.
Yeah, well,
it's an absolute nightmare. I've just got, I've got no money. You know, and every single time, little kid in the whole world, Alex, not talking about one region, not talking about Yorkshire or, you know, West Midlands or London, talking about whole world. Every single time kid loses tooth, I've got to go there and give him money. Money I haven't got. Where am I supposed to get this money from? No one wants to buy the teeth, so I've got no money to give to kids.
Jeez.
It's just totally backwards.
Well, how long have you been doing it for, mate?
I inherited business from my dad.
Yeah.
And he, you know, he was doing it for years. And he used to go off, you know, into a kid's house, come back with the teeth, and I didn't think anything of it. I thought, oh, teeth, great. One day, when I'm older, I'll have loads of teeth, and life will be easy.
Well, how did he make it work?
I don't know who he sold them to.
No, well, no.
That's an absolute nightmare. And my son keeps going on at me, keeps saying, Dad, when are you going to teach me trade?
Oh.
I have to look at him in the eye and say, son, I don't think it's for you. I mean, you're better off being a plumber or an accountant or a lawyer.
Yeah.
There's no money in teeth. No one cares about teeth anymore.
Oh.
It's terrible. I'm absolutely flat broke. I'm considering, I mean, I'll tell you, this is how far it's gone, Alex. I'm considering not waiting.
What do you mean? What do you mean, not waiting?
No, because, you know, at the moment, I've got to wait, haven't I, till kids' tooth has fallen out before I can go and get the tooth.
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking, why wait?
What?
Thinking about punching kid in the face and getting his teeth. You know, one-stop shop.
Sort of despite the moral implications there. If you can't sell the teeth, though, Tooth Fairy, what's the point, like?
Well, because it's all about bulk these days, isn't it? People want to buy stuff in bulk.
Right.
You know, I went down dry cleaners the other day to get my cloak cleaned.
Yeah.
You know, I went to the shop on the way.
Right.
Walked out with two big bottles of shampoo, because they were buy one, get one free. I haven't even got hair. What am I going to use shampoo for?
Oh, dear.
Absolutely ridiculous. So I figured, because everyone likes bulk, everyone likes buying in bulk.
Yeah.
If I just, you know, go to the market with big bag of teeth,
right?
You know, and say, here you go, here's all the teeth you could ever need, you know, someone will buy it, won't they? They'll be impressed by the bulk.
Stand by for audio. Got it.
And now,
The Alex Baker Show
brings you one of the most exciting events it's ever been our privilege to bring.
Here we go again.
And this is just the beginning.
The Alex Baker Show podcast.
Floor, baby. Screen Radio, good evening. How are you? Hope you're feeling bloody marvellous. I'm good, thank you. We're getting so close to Christmas. I'm so excited.
The Alex Baker Show. Screen Radio.
Baker, booming out across the whole of the UK and beyond.
It's not beyond, actually.
You're supposed to do the echo effect.
Yeah, but it's not correct.
Oh, well, you can listen like on proxies, though. I mean, not supposed to, like legally. I don't think it matters.
That's not a thing.
Don't really play enough music for it to matter, do we?
You can listen
to this bit on a proxy.
You could listen to the podcast,
I believe. You could download the podcast. Download the podcast! You could even rate and review the podcast.
Rate and review the podcast.
Or you can even subscribe to the podcast.
Subscribe to the podcast.
Yeah. So anyway, do you want to give me something real, Turco?
Pressure.
Okay. Yeah. Strong echo effect, bro. Into that.
Thanks.
I forgot my point, but here we are for the show. Podcast back up and running. Get involved in some of that. We stuck to our plan of releasing 5 last week and 5 this week. So, you're welcome. What more can I say? My name's Alex Baker.
Kevin Hingley's in the his ass.
I'm really proud of us.
I am as well.
I'm especially proud of you. Because my part in this is quite minimal.
Yeah.
It's quite easy for me.
You can say that about a lot of things.
crushing. No, I just have to upload it. Well, I have to sit there waiting for you to make them. But you've been doing it, man.
I have.
You've been doing good.
I've been on top of it. It takes ages to make them as well.
And I've actually been enjoying listening to them as well. I've been listening back to our slightly narcissistic, but, you know, it's fine.
I think it's good that we listen to the show when, you know, when we have time.
I do hate that when, like, you speak to bands or whatever. And you ask them, like, oh, what's your favourite album you've done? They're like, I hate them all, never listen to any of them or whatever, you know. Like,
yeah, but
take pride in your work.
Exactly. I would listen to... the whole point of this show is we're making a show that we want to listen to.
Yeah, that
makes nobody
us
else
laugh.
Is doing. Yeah, that we find funny. That's like the whole point.
No one else is listening to
it. Yeah, it doesn't matter that no one else cares. This is for us. Renee's here. What you saying, Renee?
Hiya.
Now we have to stop everything and just marvel at the gloriousness that is Renee's hair.
You can't see it.
What is it called when you have your hair done like that?
Braids.
Box
braids.
Why are they called box braids?
I'm not sure. I think it's because it's like a protective
Are they from a box?
And they're not from a box. I won't bore you with it, but yeah.
But they're thick braids. They're like halfway to being dreads. That's how thick they are.
No, they're like plaits.
They're amazing. Are they heavy?
They were at first because my hair was so short, and now it's like, oh my gosh, this is what hair feels like. My neck was straining, but now it's fine.
So here's what I don't understand. So not all of that is your hair, right?
No.
Because you've got quite short hair. Yeah. So, but is some of that your hair?
Yeah.
Is it weaved into the same
plait? It's like plaited in. They're just plaits, yeah. So they just start at the top, plait, and then they just carry on with like fake hair.
So in every plait, there is some hair and some non-hair?
Yeah.
Okay. I just wanted to get that clear.
This is so boring for everyone listening because they can't see it.
Yeah, but we can take a photo. Kev, take a photo of her crazy hair.
It's
not crazy hair. Were you tempted to have one of different every colour of the rainbow?
No, do you know what? I see some people with them and they look really cool, but I'm like, no. Look, just plain black, please.
Oh, they do look, they're really long as well.
They keep getting stuck in my armpit. Nice.
Sexy imagery there.
Have you been like on the toilet at one point and had like a wipe and then gone, oh no, my braid's in it?
No.
What's that happened?
Do you know what? Funnily enough, sorry. I can wipe my own ass.
Can you?
I can do that now.
Oh, right.
Like, it's taken a while, but I can do it.
I've ever told you my wipe the ass story.
Oh, wow.
I might have done ages ago. It's quite a distressing story. Why do I do this to myself?
I don't know, but I enjoy it so much.
When I was about, I don't know, wasn't even that young. I can't remember how old I was. Maybe 6 or 7, maybe 8, I don't know, maybe 12, maybe 14. Anyway, I remember so clearly a period in my life where, you know, when you're a kid, like your parents like wipe your bum for you, right? Mm. Or your carer, or like your guardian or whatever. Yeah. So that's like the way it works. But there's a point where they don't do that for you anymore. And I remember this, I don't know whether my parents did this on purpose, but I remember once my parents going out and we had a babysitter and I'm old enough to remember this really clearly, so I'm slightly worried about how old I might have been. But we had this babysitter and I remember, you know, when you finished your poo or your wee or whatever it was, you'd call to your parents and you'd go, Mum, I'm finished. And she'd go, okay. And she'd come and like help wipe your ass for you, right?
Do you think there's anyone having a poo right now?
Possibly, yeah.
I'd like to think so.
Yeah, hopefully. Hopefully at all times.
Flush as you go.
And so I remember my babysitter being around and me finishing my poo and being like, I can't remember what her name was. So she was called Angela. Being like, Angela, I'm finished. And she was like, finished what? And I was like, my poo. And she was like, and? I was like, nothing. So I had to do it myself. And then from then on, I did it myself. And I wonder whether my parents did that on purpose because I was getting to an age where I was clearly far too old to need parental help.
But they didn't want to be the people that you resented for not helping, so they made Angela say...
They made poor Angela part of it.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that conversation between your mum and dad? Like, he's 45 now, I'm not wiping his ass anymore.
They might be wiping it again at 45. We'll see how we get on. Sophie's also here. What you saying, Sophie?
You all right? Yeah, I'm
You got
fine.
Any ass wipe stories?
I've got too many to mention. That's
have
the problem. I always panic when poo comes up in conversation.
Why?
I've got a lot of poo stories.
Have you?
Yeah. I struggle with severe IBS.
Oh, so I do as well.
No. The stories are endless.
I've got IBS too.
Oh,
high five my IBS brethren. Yeah, man. IBS sucks. For people that don't know, let's raise awareness of IBS here on the Alex Baker Show.
All right.
A lot of people don't know about IBS. IBS, otherwise known as irritable bowel syndrome, is a syndrome where your bowel is irritated all the time. It gets irritated by lots of really pointless, stupid stuff. I remember for me, irritable bowel syndrome came on when I was about, I don't know, 15 years old or something. And I was in Italy in a caravan park and I had a bowl of crunchy nut cornflakes one evening. Mm. That wasn't unheard of. I often had bowls of crunchy nut cornflakes in
well,
the evening.
Well, they're
delicious. There are other brands of crunchy nut cornflakes available. Not called crunchy nut cornflakes, but taste pretty much the same. And I went to bed thinking, oh, no problem, no big deal. Woke up in the evening with the most excruciating pain I've ever experienced in my entire life. I was convinced I was dying. Ran to the toilet, my guts out for about an hour and a half and felt better. And the next day, I woke up going, whoa, I wonder what that was. Didn't really know. Thought maybe it was a bug because I was abroad or maybe something like that. Didn't really figure it out. And then a couple of days later, I had another bowl of crunchy nut cornflakes and exactly the same thing happened. And it turned out I developed a, like, overwhelming intolerance to corn pretty much overnight.
Oh, wow.
So sweet corn, anything with corn in.
That's such a shame.
It would just floor me. And then the intolerance changed and it wasn't corn anymore, it was milk. So I went lactose-free and I went on soya milk for years. And then that kind of went away. But all through my life, I've had, since that point, every sort of 6, 7, 8 months, a year, whatever, an intolerance will change and I'll be massively intolerant to something and it will cause IBS.
Yeah.
Is that awful. What yours is like?
Yeah, it's diabolical. I create Jackson Pollock artwork in China, like all over
that's
the country.
Absolutely disgusting.
It's explosive.
Yeah.
It's violent.
Yeah,
it's grim, and that fear that you might, poo yourself.
Oh yeah, it's real.
On the underground is
the
like
fear
a
is
daily...
real. I used to do this thing when I went DJing. God, I give too much stuff away on this show.
So?
I used to go DJing, and I'd put because I've kind of got it under control now because I kind of know what things set me off. Right, for example. Mm. Rich foods, like lots of mayonnaise, pizza,
the best stuff.
That kind of stuff, that really sets me off. But I used to DJ at Rock City. A big shout out to anyone that goes to Rock City and used to come and watch me DJ. Bet you didn't know this was going on. I used to DJ at Rock City in Nottingham every 2 weeks. And I had this like routine, right, for Rock City. There was a hotel next door called the Welbeck, which I used to stay at every single time I DJed there. And in the morning I'd have like a big cooked breakfast, but in the evening before I went to DJ I'd always have this BLT because the Welbeck Hotel in Nottingham does the best BLT in the world. So nice, right? But it's really rich, loads of mayonnaise, and I'd have chips with extra mayonnaise and stuff like that. And then invariably what would happen is that I'd get behind the decks, and at about 2 a.m, after DJing for a few hours, I'd get the most intense IBS like attack, and I'd have to go and find a toilet to like in while not missing a beat with the music. So what I started doing is I started creating poo mixes.
Yeah.
Right?
Metallica.
Yeah. Halo by Machine Head. Pretty much guaranteed, if you went to Rock City in Nottingham and you danced to Halo by Machine Head in the basement between the years of about 2013 and about 2009, the reason that song was on was because I was myself somewhere.
Yes.
Like, fact. It's the only time I'd ever play Halo by Machine Head is when I was having a unbearably agonising poo somewhere in the Rock City establishment. And I even got to the point, in fact, even now, in my DJ bag, in the front pocket, I've got a toilet roll. Because, the worst of fear, isn't it? You turn up at a toilet, there's no toilet roll.
What do
you do?
I have supplies at all times.
Exactly. Yeah, you have to. As a fellow IBS sufferer, the deal.
Toilet roll and a Machine Head CD.
Yeah.
Ready to go wherever you are.
For any eventuality.
I've just been reminded of something that really made me laugh at the time as well. You mentioned pizza there as one of the things that can kind of bring it on for you.
Yeah.
From time to time. I remember a very specific evening I can't remember what we were doing. It's not that specific evening then. I think we were working late or something.
Totally the opposite of specific.
Yeah, we were working late doing something or other and we'd had a really long day. And you said, Kev, this is what's going to happen. We're going to order a pizza right now. I am fully aware of what's going to happen to me about an hour afterwards. But I am entirely prepared for it. I want this pizza that
so
much that I'm going to put myself through hell so we can have pizza. And we had pizza.
And sure enough, an hour later,
hell happened.
I was screaming and sweating in the toilet.
But I think you said to me, like, still worth it.
It is. Sometimes that's the trade-off. Do you have that?
All the time. If I know there's a toilet nearby, I will stuff my face with abandon. I don't care. It's worth a bit of squitting, isn't it?
Squitting.
What do you guys do on Christmas Day?
Well, Christmas Day is
squitting.
For me, Christmas Day is not so bad as long as I stay away from cheese. Because turkey, vegetables, sausages, I'm all right with all that stuff. But if I tuck into the cheese course,
What about you, Sophie?
Game over.
What do you have to stay away from?
Well, mine keeps changing. At the moment, it's salicylates.
What's salicylates?
I can tell from your faces, you're like, whoa.
How do you stay away from something that doesn't exist?
No, you have to Google it because it's found naturally in fruit, vegetables, but also processed food. So it's
everything.
It's very specific, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, it's tricky.
So how the hell do you stay away from that? Just look at every single thing you're eating all the time?
I'm struggling at the moment, if I'm honest.
Brutal.
Yeah.
Oh, you guys.
I know.
It's brutal, Renee. But I'm glad we spoke about it, because although it's kind of, you know, people think it's embarrassing, I don't really get embarrassed. I know that we're talking to a national audience here. But, you know, I think it's good that we talk about it, because people might be going, oh, that's kind of what I've got. Yeah. Oh, mate, I'm not dying. Oh, phew, that's cool. Yeah.
Who's not taboo?
Poo's not taboo, Renee.
Like that.
Smashed it.
Hashtag poo is not taboo.
Yeah, throw it up right now. Hashtag poo is not taboo.
Not poo, please.
Yeah, don't throw up poo. If you're throwing up poo, definitely go to the doctors. That sounds awful. Do you remember that TV show? There was a TV show about kids being malnourished at school, and kids were literally throwing up poo particles because there was literally no fibre in their diets at all, so they were throwing up poo particles.
Why are you laughing?
Because it's so awful. I mean, how is that?
No poo pun.
Oh, no.
Who's gone, sorry?
My snowman.
Right, your snowman's been stolen.
I'm not being funny. I know it's only a snowman, but I thought it'd be fine. What if it being icy and that? People ain't been walking up and down the road. It ain't a nice road, but at the end of the day, you don't expect someone to nick your snowman. Do you know what I mean?
Anyway, so talking about poo and allergies, sort of. Kev and I were talking about allergies earlier, because there was actually, let's change the tone, because we're being a bit banterful, and I want to set the right tone here, because something actually genuinely awful happened this last week, because a girl killed herself because she was allergic to Wi-Fi. Kev, you know more about this?
Yeah, so I think...
Talk to me.
It's some kind of... it's not specifically Wi-Fi. It's some kind of condition. I think it's called hyper-electrosensitivity or something along those lines. But it manifests through Wi-Fi and those kind of electronic signals, you know, that style of transmitting a signal through the air.
Yeah.
And I believe that she was having problems with it, and they eventually worked out what was going on, but it was causing her to have really intense headaches, it was causing bladder problems, it was causing tiredness, all kinds of symptoms. They eventually worked it out and removed Wi-Fi from her family home, but then I think there were some issues around the school she was going to, and that they were still having, you know, Wi-Fi in certain places.
Yeah, because how do you take it out of a school... When I presume schools are so dependent on it these days, what's the situation? Do you have to take it out for one student? But then, I don't know, how does that work?
It's tricky, isn't it? Because it's kind of a question that you can raise across a lot of allergies as well, in that where's the sort of the line for catering? By catering, I mean catering to people with allergies and preventing things happening. So by being responsible and not using certain materials or foods or whatever. So you talk about the school, maybe the school needed Wi-Fi, but if there's one person that's allergic to it, should that person have the right to...
Make it the case that the school can't use Wi-Fi anywhere, ever?
Yeah, or do you have to put some kind of other measure in place where there's just one area, perhaps, that she can use? Or because it is an incredibly rare... condition. It's not something that everyone has.
But you know, I wonder whether it is that rare, and whether it's just the people aren't feeling right and don't really understand why.
Yeah,
and but it's because you're getting bombarded with all these like invisible waves, like all the time. It can't be good, can it?
No.
I mean, I'm actually genuinely worried about where we're going to be in like 50 years when like the first generation of smartphone users has gone through a whole life cycle. Do you know what I mean? Because we're not there yet. It's going to be another 20 years or so for that to have actually...
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? The first smartphone users to have got old.
And also Wi-Fi coverage is only going to get more and more, isn't it?
At the moment,
you say it is everywhere, but probably if you looked at a kind of map of the UK and sort of percentage
there's
going to be massive gaps.
Places where
like
it is
in the city,
there.
You can't really leave your house, because not only if it's like buildings, like office buildings, that's, you can get it on the underground, and then people have become their own Wi-Fi hotspots.
Yeah.
So even if you're in a park and you think you're safe, that poor girl is probably, you know,
how do you escape it?
Like,
it's brutal. Absolutely brutal. So I'm really interested to see how that sort of develops, because that's a mad situation where people are allergic to things that are so pervasive. You know, they're just absolutely everywhere. I mean, they are everywhere. Like you say, not in the middle of the countryside and stuff like that, but in a city like London or Birmingham or Manchester or Leeds or anywhere like that, there's Wi-Fi everywhere, pretty much.
But it's only going to get worse, and also the signal strength is only going to get better, which could mean that the... I mean, I don't fully understand the mechanics of Wi-Fi signals, but in my head, when you improve Wi-Fi coverage and reception, that's more intensity in the air, surely.
Yeah, I would have thought so, yeah.
You know.
But maybe they could develop it. Like, you know how you have, like, gamma rays and X-rays and stuff? Maybe they can develop, like, a different type of Wi-Fi that doesn't affect people.
That isn't dangerous or whatever.
But does the same job. Mm.
But then it might affect people that it didn't affect before. Do you know what I mean? How do you sort of, like, terrifying.
Also, quick question. Why do you need a Wi-Fi in school? Because... bear with me for a second, but back in my day, when I was in school, we had an IT room, and that was the room that was had the internet, right?
Yeah, it's very different nowadays.
Why do you need actual Wi-Fi? Why can't
you
have a proper internet, like fiber optic internet connection?
Because we're not in school now, man. Like, lessons have like iPads and all that kind of stuff.
But can they not still?
You can't connect in every single device. Do you know what I mean? Like, and also, it's so much more costly to get fiber optic cabling installed in all these publicly funded schools. Do you know what I mean?
I suppose.
How are you supposed to do it? So Wi-Fi is like a cheap option, isn't it? Everyone would always prefer to have like a solid connection, but if it's a difference between chucking up a 200 quid Wi-Fi router or spending £50,000 like rewiring a whole school. So it's totally brutal. I don't really know what's going to happen with that, but I'm sort of kind of freaked out by it. Also, just to move away from that and go down a bit of a conspiracy theory angle for a second, I heard something ages ago that's a bit freaky as well. And I probably shouldn't talk about this given the industry that I work in, but I'm going to. I heard years and years ago from a reputable source that digital radio waves work in a very different way to analog radio waves.
Right.
So much so that digital radio waves are actually much more akin to how your physical brain works. So how that, you know, your brain actually works is very much more kind of the technology of digital radio waves than it is analog. So the idea being there that if digital radio waves were sophisticated enough, you might be able to manipulate the signals in people's brains using digital radio waves.
Oh, wow. Okay, so it's almost like, to kind of give it an analogy, it's like a key that fits a lock better.
Yeah.
Sort of thing.
Exactly.
Okay.
So, so I don't know whether anything will ever come of that, but that's...
Shout out to our digital listeners in London right now.
Yeah.
How are you doing this?
Controlling your mind. Think of a giraffe. You are thinking of a giraffe. Consider yourself controlled, bro.
The future. The time not yet come. What is to come?
Awesome! Awesome things that don't exist, but should exist, as it would be awesome if they did.
Oh, yeah. Time for awesome things that don't exist, but should exist, because it'd be awesome if they did. It's an invention feature where you guys hit us up at Kerrang Radio on Twitter, or email me, alex@kerrangradio.co.uk, and let's have a little chat about your amazing inventions. This week I was inspired to do it, and I know Kev hates it when I do this, but I was inspired to do it by an awesome invention that does exist that came from a bunch of design students that's kind of stupid as an invention, but also is sort of awesome. So they created a leather handbag with built-in speakers and a sensor, so every time that you remove your credit card from your bag, it talks to you with warnings about not overspending. So it'll go, embarrass you. It basically embarrasses you, guys. I don't think you've got enough money for that, mate.
Amazing.
Stuff like that. The best thing about this, though, for some reason, which they actually researched and, like, you know, they did this on purpose, that the voice is a Cockney man.
Oh.
So he's like, bloody hell, apples and pears, governor. You don't want to spend that money, you like, it's like a Cockney dude. I don't think he swears that much, but, you know, cheers, Tony. But yeah. So how weird is that?
Why is it a Cockney?
I don't know.
Do people sort of trust Cockneys with money more?
I don't know. Maybe.
Something like that.
Just, I don't know. Just maybe it's just a voice that they can't ignore. The sound of a Cockney.
Ah.
So, yeah, there we go. That's an awesome invention. Any awesome inventions from you guys?
Well, if we're talking about awesome things that already exist.
Oh!
But will lead me on to, by extension, an awesome thing that should exist.
Good.
Just staying true to the feature.
Like it.
Stay true to yourself, people.
Yeah.
Have you seen the video that came out this week that Amazon have done with Jeremy Clarkson talking about their drone delivery service?
No.
Okay, so Amazon's drone delivery thing is real. It is going to happen at some point.
So basically. Products delivered by drone.
Yeah. So, excellent. I mean, we don't know how long it's going to be. They're going through all kinds of regulatory stuff at the moment with the FAA or whatever it is in America that controls airspace. It's all coming in America. But I think it's awesome. It's quite concerning, and I think the machine war is nearly upon us. These guys will be on the front line.
Yeah.
But the video is really cool. They actually physically show it happening and how it's going to work.
Wicked.
So you've got a little a guy places an order on his iPad or whatever on the Amazon app. Guy at the factory packages it up, puts it in a box, and then puts it on this little platform that sits underneath the drone, and then it kind of, the drone sort of sucks the platform up into itself.
And then Jeremy Clarkson comes in from nowhere and just punches someone in the face for no reason.
And then your parcel appears.
Wicked.
But no, drone takes off, flies to your house.
Yeah.
Now, the way it's going to work is you have to live within 15 miles of a warehouse or something.
It's pretty reasonable.
And you have these like mats that you put out in the garden. So they've got these like landing mats, and they put like a few of them out in the garden. I think it likes to have a couple of alternate options or something. But the drone has got detect and avoid technology. So it flies, you know, a kind of predetermined path to your house. But if something gets in the way, it will go around it. So if it's a bird or a telegraph pole or whatever. So it's not piloted. There's not the need for someone to sit there with a remote control.
It's totally automated.
It's automated, and it just avoids stuff if it gets in the way. Ooh. And then when it gets to your house, it scans the ground for these landing pads, and it finds one, lands on it, drops your parcel off, and off on its way. And
that they is think amazing.
That whole process will take 30 minutes.
How do you get the pads then?
I imagine you sign up, like, I don't think it's going to be a standard delivery thing. It's going to be, like, I think it is a Prime thing, actually, and I think you sign up for it and they'll send you the pads or whatever.
I'm not a fan of Prime at the moment, to be falling out.
But 30 minutes, that's crazy.
And if you look up at the sky, there's just going to be drones everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, maybe not that many because you've got to live near a factory.
Yeah, but think about in 30 years' time.
Yeah, yeah, if when they expand, you know.
You look up at the sky and there'll be drones everywhere delivering stuff.
Yeah, but I did have a few questions immediately when I saw it. First of all, I thought, what happens if you're sort of, so you order something, you're waiting in your garden for it to come, drone comes down, why don't you just grab the drone? Just keep it.
Well, I presume there's some sort of...
Maybe it deactivates or something, so it's useless. Or
what if you buy a drone and the drone delivers the drone?
That would be amazing. The other issue, and this is something I saw come up when they first announced that they were looking into this, is drone hacking. So there was a worry that people would sit around, monitor when there's some kind of delivery going on, and then hack the drone so that, like,
just take the delivery.
They get the delivery instead.
Well, that's surely got to be one of the biggest downsides.
Which is slightly concerning. But anyway, I just thought, I think it's exciting. I don't know when it's going to happen, but it excites me and terrifies me in equal measure.
I'm actually a little bit worried about the future of robots, as a lot of people are. But you know, they've recently started trying to teach robots to say no to humans.
Oh.
There's this big...
They already do. Put it in the bag, in the bagging area. Like, leave me alone. How long have these been up for? Like, around? They still can't get it right. Like, no.
What I don't understand is why it's the case that people, intelligent people in the world of science, are trying to, literally trying to make robots more intelligent than humans. Surely that's a bad idea.
Well, that's the point of artificial intelligence, though, isn't it? They want to create things that are more intelligent than us so that they can achieve more than we can as a species.
Yeah, but surely they just know that that is not going to end well. So simultaneously, they're trying to make robots more intelligent than humans, and they're teaching robots to say no to humans.
Yeah, but I wonder if they're doing it, even though it was a concept from science fiction, I do wonder if they're applying the three laws of robotics as a kind of safeguard. You have to wonder about that.
What are the three laws of robotics?
I can't remember exactly what they are.
Just chuck something so profound
into
the... Do
you not know about the laws of robotics?
No.
I thought you of all people would know about this.
Why? When have I ever...
He doesn't work in IT.
Yeah.
It's nothing to do with IT.
When have I ever expressed a deep, profound knowledge of robotics?
This always comes up when people talk about the kind of rise of the machines and what you're talking about. Right. The three laws of robotics... One, a robot may not immerse a human being or, through lack of flotation, I don't know what that means, but allow a human to come to harm. So the idea is a robot cannot knowingly let a human being come to harm.
Right.
Is the idea. Number two, a robot must obey all commands and steering input given by its human owner, except where such input would conflict with the first law.
Yeah.
So you can, a robot must say yes, but the reason they would teach it to say no is so that it can say no when a human is commanding it to hurt someone.
Yeah.
Or to even hurt the owner.
Itself, yeah.
Potentially.
Yeah.
To protect humanity. And number three, a robot must preserve its own flotation as long as such preservation does not conflict with the first or second law. Now, this is quite, it's quite a confusing concept because in order for all three of those laws to apply, it puts quite a weird decision process in the robot.
That's irrelevant, though, because it's all, that's all...
Why?
That's not the law of the world. That's just what we've said are some laws.
Yeah.
All it's going to take is one person to go, oh, f*** that first law, don't care about that, and it disappears.
That's all law, though.
Yeah, but do you know what I mean? Like, that's like, those laws of robotics mean absolutely nothing.
Well, no, they don't officially yet, but what I'm saying is, if we are developing artificial intelligence and robot, which we are, we know that, but if we're ever going to take it to the kind of next level and mass commercially produced AI, should it be the case that the laws of robotics are introduced as actual laws in life for sort of restricting these things?
Because
we're getting to the stage now where they could actually be relevant. Like you say, they're talking about teaching robots to say no.
At any moment.
That is the point, I think, where these need to come into play.
We're getting to a point now where it almost feels like at any moment someone's going to write a piece of code or someone's going to flick a switch and a computer who's able to think for itself, make its own decisions, further its own existence by creating other stuff, is going to suddenly come into being. And as soon as that happens, we're f***ed. Like, immediately.
What film did that happen in?
Oh, it happens in loads of films. It's like Terminator,
and...
The
computers were developing faster and faster each time, and then they were, like, literally were taking over.
There was that one recently that I told you to watch, based on Kev's Movie Minute review, and I can't remember what it was called.
Transcendence.
Transcendence, that was it.
But that's the thing, that's exactly what I mean. Like, once you've hit that moment where a robot becomes like, or a computer becomes autonomous and has its own artificial intelligence, not even artificial intelligence, it's just, it is intelligent. Yeah. It thinks and feels and acts how it wants. We're in like a blink of an eye, it will make loads of calculations and do loads of stuff that will completely, you know, if it wants to destroy humanity, will completely destroy humanity in a second.
So
it could shut down every power plant, it could blow up every plane. It could do everything it wants, like,
stop
in a second.
It.
Do you know what I mean, though?
Oh, yeah.
If it's, like, if it's so powerful that it's, like, anything that a human can come up with is, like, nothing, then we're f***ed. Why are they trying to make that happen?
But you have to wonder what the robot's incentive would be to do that. Just because it can do it, does it mean it will do it?
Well, it might decide that the future of the planet is unsustainable with the amount of people on it, and it has to therefore wipe half the population of the world out.
Mm.
Yeah.
But
actually, that wouldn't be inaccurate.
Technically, no.
It might not be the moral thing to do, but it wouldn't. Or maybe it will decide that it is the moral thing to do.
But I think that's why these...
But it's just like, what I don't understand about it is that, like, we've got robotics to a pretty cool place. It'd be really great if we can push it a little bit further so that we can, you know, cure cancer overnight because a robot can figure out how to do it. When we can't, we simply don't have the mental capability to do it yet, but maybe a robot could. So that'd be great to push it to that extent. But then surely that you just want to stop there and go, that's enough now. Like, why would you want to engineer? It's like, I can't think of a parallel example, but it's like engineering the most insane, like, potentially destructive weapon of all time. Like, why would you want to do that?
But they've done that.
Well, that you're not going to be in control of. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like building an army against yourself. Like, why would anyone do that?
But maybe they wouldn't. Maybe that's just a kind of a concern that's come up from watching lots of these films. You know, maybe that wouldn't ever actually happen. Maybe it really is being steered down the kind of medical route and that kind of thing.
But it'll get to a point where, I'm telling you.
But there's always, there's a competitive nature to science, as in any field, and scientists get competitive. And so some of them will think, I can make you've made that impressive robot, but it doesn't look very strong, so I'm going to make a stronger one. And then the other person makes one stronger than that. And they say, well, how can I prove mine stronger than yours? I'm going to get it to punch this human.
And then meanwhile, we're all f***.
Yeah.
Just waiting for our Amazon deliveries.
Exactly. Yeah. Can't we just leave it with that? Amazon drones, can't we just stop there? That's enough.
Well, I was going to suggest, as my awesome thing, an extension of the Amazon drone thing. I'd like drones that could just, that were sort of personal assistant drones. So, you know, when you want, you've got to travel somewhere and you've got loads of stuff to carry.
Yeah.
But maybe you're sort of not going in the car. Maybe you've got to get on a bus or the tube or whatever. And
you send that up into really the sky. Awkward.
You have it follow you in the sky carrying your stuff, and it sort of tracks you, goes wherever you go. And when you're ready, you get it to land and there's your stuff.
I'd be down with that. I'd be down with that. Yeah. Right, anyway, we've talked for ages, so we've got to go to a break. But on the way, any of you guys watch Storage Hunters?
Yes. Mm.
Well, Sean Kelly, the main man in Storage Hunters, that auction guy, he's going to come in and we're going to chat about Storage Hunters and how absolutely insane his life is. This guy has done, like, everything. So, yeah, stay exactly where you are, and I'm going to get him in, and we're going to have a little chin wag. Oh, lovely.
The Alex Baker Show podcast.
Yes, my little chickens. Welcome to it. This is the Alex Baker Show. Happy Sunday night. If you listen to the podcast, happy podcast day. No matter where you are, don't forget you can download it. You can chat. You can chat? That's not what I meant to say. You can listen. Quite literally the opposite of chat. In fact, the one thing you can't do whilst listening to the podcast is chat. It's pretty much physically impossible to do any sort of talking while the podcast in your ears, because it's so distracting. Imagine trying to hold a conversation now while I'm blabbering away in your ear. Bloody nightmare. But listen to it whenever you like. Anyway, shut up, Alex. What I'm going to do right now is get Sean Kelly in from Storage Hunters, because he is a bloody legend. Before that, though, I'm going to play you an explosive sound effect. As we've talked about on the show loads of times before, there's a particular TV show that I love that always kind of blows my mind, because it's one of those brilliant shows but you don't really understand why you love it as much as you do. All you know is that you love it. And I'm talking, of course, about Storage Hunters. And I'm very, very excited and very honoured, in fact, to have Mr. Sean Kelly here.
Yeah.
The host, auctioneer, comedian extraordinaire, and a man with a littered history of crazy jobs.
I'm going to need you to come to everything I do and introduce me just exactly that way, right there. What a great introduction.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
Yeah.
It all goes downhill from now.
Okay, all right.
So you've been doing... You've had this most crazy life, right? So,
yeah.
So far to date, had this crazy life, like you're on death's door. Let's hope not. But, you know, you've been everything from, you were in Operation Desert Storm in Iraq.
That is correct,
is that
sir.
Actually right?
That is correct.
So just out of nowhere, or have you
like
military training?
Operation Desert Storm. I try to bid call everything now. Yeah, I was in Operation Desert Storm in Iraq. Can you guys believe that?
That's no.
Crazy. Were you even born yet?
I was, yeah, I was. I was quite young.
How old were you in 1990?
I'm 32 now, so 1990 is quick maths. 13?
I was 3.
Is that right?
You were 3 years old.
3? Yeah.
I love
13
that.
In
I can't
1990.
Have been 13 if you were 3.
No,
I'm not
you're
that
only
much.
A couple of years older than me.
Oh, right. So
anyway.
So what were you doing there?
Well, I was a, believe it or not, I was a German translator for military intelligence, and obviously there's a big need for that in Iraq. Bring in the German translators! We don't understand what the Iraqis are saying! Wunderbar! He is here! Yeah. So what they did was we didn't have enough Arabic linguists. We didn't have enough translators.
All right.
So what they did was they took all these kids that OPEC had in university, they pulled their scholarships, gave them 1 week of basic training, put them in the U.S. Army, assigned them to all the Russian, German, and Czech linguists, right? And so we'd have them sit next to us, headphones on. We'd be listening into the Iraqis. They would transcribe what the Iraqis were saying, translate it into English. Then we would write up the reports and send the reports forward. So that's how we were gathering our intel.
So were you literally drafted then? Or
well, not me.
Sort of,
No. I went in, you know, I went in and I was a German linguist and I was living in Germany, you know, working for military intelligence as a German translator kind of guy. And then when the whole war came around, then I got deployed from Germany to Iraq. And I'm like, yeah, but I don't speak Arabic, you know?
This is so, I love people like you that have these fascinating lives. My life's been so kind of dull. I mean, dull, I don't mean dull, but kind of like, I went to school, I went to uni, I started working in the radio. You know, that's kind of it.
Yeah.
Like, there was a teacher at my school who'd done pretty much every job under the sun. You know, he'd been like a butcher, a baker, candlestick maker. Oh. He lived on a barge, you know, the rest of it. You were a forklift truck driver
wow,
at one point.
Wow, you've done your research.
Of course.
Okay, so I've been living on my own since I was 16 years old. And so I moved out on my own, but I didn't want to like drop out of school. So I stayed in school and got a job at night, and I drove a forklift unloading those big giant Sealand containers.
Yeah, yeah.
I was working in a warehouse, and my job was to take the forklift and go on and unload all the pallets. And then I'd get home late at night, do my homework, wake up the next morning, go to school, then go straight to work.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I love the diligence.
Yeah, yeah. That's where I really developed the work ethic.
And do you reckon that's where you started falling in love with containers as well?
You know what? I never thought of it. Oh, my gosh. You should be my therapist as well. Introduce me at every show and do my therapy. Because
you know what?
I just had a breakthrough because of you.
I got your back.
Yeah. Now I understand the weird obsession that I've had with storage containers my whole life.
You start getting, every time you're around storage containers, you start getting this real kind of feeling that you're young again. And
yes. Yeah. It all makes sense.
For the future possibilities.
And maybe back then you were lifting them onto the truck and one day just thought, I wonder what's actually inside this thing. I've never even looked. And then,
or I thought to myself, I wonder if I could just sell this off without ever opening it up and knowing what's inside it.
Well, that's one of the things I want to know about storage hunters, right?
Yeah.
And I don't mean this. If you're offended by this question, please tell me to get lost. But how much?
Not much offends me, by the way.
Okay,
go ahead.
So, how much of it is actually real? Are these people real?
Oh, listen, all of the buyers who are on the show, we were just talking about that on the ride over here, right? We were just talking in the car because
they're such characters.
Yeah, so we were just talking in the car because I'm out promoting the fact that we have a celebrity episode
coming 29th out. Yeah, 29th of December.
Yeah, right? So we're out, and so Katie, who does my PR, she was saying to me, she goes, well, what was that like? And I said, it was so much fun because I was working with people who are celebrities who are used to being on camera.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas with storage hunters, I'm not. Those are people who will buy and sell and they go to car boot sales.
They literally do
it for
a living.
And they've never been on camera and it is not pleasant, especially in the beginning because, you know, you meet them for the first time before they ever go on camera. And they're kind of being themselves. But then as soon as you stick three cameras in their faces, they freak out,
yeah.
Or they start acting like, boom, a-holes.
Yeah.
Right?
One or two ways.
Yeah, you can go one or two ways. And so I got to tell you, no, these people are all real. I wish they were actors. It would be so much more fun for me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the thing is, like, I'm not an actor, but I've been doing stand-up comedy for 17 years.
That's another string to your bow.
Yeah. So basically, with all the stand-up comedy, and I've appeared on other TV shows and stuff like that, I'm really an auctioneer. I'm really a stand-up comedian. I really am a performer. So for me, it all comes natural. But for these buyers, it doesn't.
Doesn't at all, yeah.
No.
But they do it. So they're out there trying to, like, get, I don't know, antique stuff and raiding storage things. They're doing that as a kind of as a constant thing. That's their job.
You could literally go to East London this Sunday out to the car boot sale. You will see Heavy D out there. Come on, mate, give me a quid for that.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, he's no.
Legitimately.
No, legitimately.
So how did you end up becoming a stand-up comedian and an auctioneer? Because you have to admit, that's kind of a strange pairing.
You know, on the surface, you might think so. But if you really think about it, a lot of the skill set are really overlapping. I mean, they're really congruent with one another. When you're a stand-up comedian, you're on stage, you're by yourself, you got the microphone in the hand.
You got a freestyle.
If you're doing crowd work, you're working the crowd,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And before that, I had sold advertising for many years. So I already had that sales inside me, right? Mm-hmm. I already knew how to sell. Mm. So then all of a sudden, to just do that and do it as an auctioneer, a friend of mine who's a comedian and an auctioneer, he's the one that pointed out to me, my friend Russ. He's like, dude, he goes, you would make an awesome auctioneer, man.
Really?
Yeah, because he goes, you do all this crowd work. You're the best salesman I know. And so
amazing.
He's the one that talked me into doing it. Yeah, thank God, because it led to this.
And what an amazing kind of dual skill set you have.
Yeah.
So is there anything you can't sell? If you're an amazing salesperson, are you able to just walk into, could you sell ice to Eskimos? Do you know what I mean?
I think so. I mean, what you have to do is you just have to find the right ice and the right Eskimo, but absolutely. You know what I mean?
What's the weirdest thing you've ever sold off then in an auction?
In an auction?
Yeah.
Oh man, I've sold so many weird things.
Really?
I've lost track. But I think the weirdest things are there's people that love to collect, right?
Sure.
And they get obsessed about their collections. And sometimes people are just hoarders. There's a hoarder who just, they can't let anything go, and they think they're collectors, but no, that's just trash. And then there are people who just have these weird obsessions. So I think sometimes it's the collections. Mm. I was just telling someone the other day that opened a storage unit, and this guy had been in love with Howard Stern. You guys know
Howard
Stern?
Yeah, yeah, of course.
So he had an entire storage unit. This was back in the States. We weren't filming this. Too bad, because it would have made a great episode. It was just a storage auction that I was doing. We opened it up, and there was just thousands and thousands and thousands of items with Howard Stern's face on it. Frisbees, footballs, baseball bats, you know, posts, you know, you name it, it had Howard Stern.
That's
this
amazing.
Dude was like the biggest Howard Stern fan.
I love the fact as well, so you just gave it away there, that you're actually doing auctions on storage places when you're not even making the show. You're doing that anyway.
Yeah, listen, you know, I've been here in the UK, I've been filming over here, I've been doing stand-up comedy tour over here. So it's one of the things I miss about being at home is that at home I just do storage auctions because that's what I do.
All the time.
Yeah. And yeah. I do a lot of charity auctions too. I raise a lot of money for nonprofits, which I love doing.
Awesome, yeah.
Yeah.
Nothing bad about
that. That's the other thing. I never realized how lucky I was going to be. I didn't realize that all this was going to lead to put me in a position where I could raise money for nonprofits and impact people that I would never meet. It's so cool.
Yeah. And what about the skill when it comes to auctioneering? Because obviously you're so famous for your quick sort of patter, or, you know, on the mic. Is that, when you're doing that, when you're sort of working a room, how much power is in the auctioneer's hands? Or is it the case that people kind of know they want it and they kind of know what they're going to? Are you manipulating people? Like
absolutely.
You are?
Yeah, here's the rule. Never buy anything at auction. No, just kidding. Unless you're at my auction, buy everything. Yeah. No. Come on down.
Yeah,
yeah. The truth of the matter is that, you know, an auction in and of itself is really, it's an emotional way to buy something.
Right.
And the last thing you want to do when you're out buying and spending your money is to get emotional, right? Yeah. But you know, when you have something where it's, because an auction is basically where you have an item and then you just bring in the audience and it's like, there's not a whole bunch of this. This is just one.
Can I just quickly explain? Let me just quickly stop you there.
Yeah.
Sean Kelly, you just controlled my brain. Because he put that down.
Yeah.
He had a cup, right? And he put the cup down. He's like, talking about how, you know, when you're an auctioneer, it's all about controlling the room and all this stuff. Put the cup down. I was instantly just focused on the cup.
Yeah,
I found myself, like, drawn towards this cup.
Now watch how quickly you buy the cup. Who wants to have a pound? I got a pound, pound, two, three, pound, number four, four, five, pound, number five, give me five. It's one trip to Starbucks. Come on, man.
I want the cup. Oh man, amazing! Yeah. And where does the quick tongue come from? Is that your own unique thing that you've just developed over the years?
So basically, it's just practice. You know, I think it helped that I speak fluent German because the Germans roll their R's a lot.
Okay.
Ach yeah, they got a very guttural, and they like to make the rolling. So I think that helped. But you know, all I'm really saying in there is I'm bid $1 bidder now, two now, $2 bidder now, three now, $3 bidder now, dollar bidder now, right? Bidder and if you switch over to pounds, I'm bid £1 bidder, number two, number three, number four, five, and then just rolling all that, you know, and then you just get it going and rolling it.
I love it.
Is the idea of that as well as sort of, you know, getting the info across and manipulating people, as we've learned, are you also just trying to constantly fill the space so there's never any silence as well?
Well, that's part of it. You don't want
the tension.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't want any silence in there, you know. Those are filler words. You're absolutely right. That dollar bidder now, that bidder now, you know. I'm bid $25 bidder now, $50, $100, $200, $300.
So good.
$400, $500. That's a monkey. All in fair warrants.
What's your monkey? What does that mean?
I don't know. I think that's something you guys say here.
It's a monkey is £500.
Oh, is it?
In Cockney, yeah.
Cockney. Yeah, in Cockney. Yeah, yeah. You got the bullseye.
The pony.
The pony.
Yeah. Pony's 100, right?
I think so. A bag of sand.
Grand, yeah. Yeah. And then, turn 100. Yeah, yeah.
And you got the monkey.
Oh man,
I prefer the monkey.
How does the monkey work in Cockney rhyming?
It's not there? Rhyming. It's just what £500 is.
Oh, of course it is. Yeah, obviously. Right. Why wouldn't it be? Brilliant. So, celebrity story hunters, like you say, this is going out on the 29th of December, right?
Yeah.
And you've got Bob Mortimer, Kimberly Wyatt, Ross Noble, Sean Ryder. What was Sean Ryder like?
Sean Ryder and Bez. I mean, you can't even use Sean in a sentence without using Bez, right? They just go together. You know what they are? They're like two maracas. You got to have two of them. Am I right? It was so much fun. Oh my gosh. And then we had the footballer Jimmy Bullard.
Yeah, yeah.
We had the boxer Carl.
Carl Froch.
Froch.
Is it Froch?
I think it's Froch.
I can never say his name.
Froch me, Froch you.
Froch you, man.
it was great. We had such a great time.
Yeah, and were they competitive? Were they getting at it?
Unbelievably competitive. I thought we were going to have a fun little celebrity day out, but everybody was competing for their charity. And you know what I mean? It's funny. Like people will put the dukes up for the charity. They're ready to fight you to the death.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, because now all of a sudden they can. You know, it's like, oh, listen, I'm just choking you to death for the starving kids, not for myself. Right. So yeah, we had a great time.
Was Bez a bit of a liability?
No, listen, Bez is. I could see why Bez has. The reputation that he has.
Yeah.
But it's such a lovely guy. He is such a lovely guy.
I did a thing years and years ago. I might have told this story on air before, where I was judging a kind of like Battle of the Bands type event.
Yeah.
And Bez was one of the judges as well, which is brilliant. You know, I love that. I love the idea that Bez and my music credentials are the same. But anyway, Bez was there. And the guy, before we started, the guy on stage was like, whatever you do, Bez, don't swear. Because this is a really like family-friendly thing.
Oh, boy.
And he was like, yo,
hell, man. Yeah, no problem, no problem.
That's like, what he sounds like. Yeah, like, literally. Okay. And then, so this little girl came on stage and sang. She must have been about 14 years old, right? She came on stage and she sang like, la, 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 you raise me up, or whatever the tune was. And then came to judge's comments, and I was like, oh, yeah, I think you could do this, and I tried to give her some constructive feedback. Bearing in mind, there's like a room with about 1,000 sort of friends and family, and Bez just went, over to you, Bez, what do you think? And he just went, f***ing loved it. I was like, oh, God, you kill me. So are you going to give us any sort of clues as to who wins in the celebrity one?
I will say, I won't let on as
don't give it away,
wins, but I will say that there were people who were far more competitive than I thought they were going to be.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like Bob, you know, I know Vic and Bob is like two just hilarious, funny guys. You know what I mean? Bob's very competitive.
Is he?
Yeah. Who would have known?
Really?
Yeah.
Was he getting down and dirty?
No, but he was very competitive. He wanted to make the most money for his charity.
Oh, that's great.
And it was fun. And what was cool is that we just had some fun moments. We got to do some impromptu improv stuff in between the bins.
Yeah.
Which led to, some rough housing at some point. It was fun.
Amazing.
It was great.
So in all of your years of popping open bins and seeing what's going down, what's the kind of bin that you've opened when you've thought, okay, this is just plain weird? I mean, you mentioned the Howard Stern thing before, but has there ever been a time where you've opened it up and you've thought, we perhaps shouldn't have opened this? Just close it back up again.
Yeah,
just close it back up again.
There are those times where you open stuff up and you go, pretty sure this is a crime scene.
Oh. You know what I mean? That's what I'm talking about, yeah.
But I'm getting 30%, so let's sell this.
This is real bad.
That's right.
Top money for this.
That's right.
Vampire circles.
Tell everybody, just ignore the dead body in the corner. Let's go. Look at the leather couch.
Oh, man, amazing. Well, Sean, it's a pleasure to have you in.
Oh,
29th
thanks.
Of December is when it's going out. On the channel Dave on Sky.
Yeah.
I'm going to be there. What a Christmas spectacular. A bit of a story chanted over Christmas.
Well, thanks for having me on, guys. I really appreciate it.
The Alex Baker Show podcast.
Welcome back to the show. It's the Alex Baker Show. Oh, Treacle. Kind of almost out of time. We keep doing this. But that was Sean Kelly. What a lovely dude. I like the sound of him.
Super lovely. He
I like the
so
sound
sweet.
Of him. What a weird thing to say.
I like the look of him as
20
well.
20 minutes with the guy. It was really nice. Him, bit of a bye, bit of a bye, bye, bit of a
bye.
You
sound like a drum and bass MC.
What a bit of a MC. We're kind of out of time, which sucks. And I'm sorry that we keep mistiming the show so that you end up with a massive bit at the start and then like loads of advert breaks in short succession. Believe it or not, it's actually not supposed to be like that, but we keep getting carried away. So apologies for that. We'll be back next week, though, with more chinwaggery. Until then, any final thoughts, Kev?
I was quite literally looking at my own reflection in the monitor, this computer monitor, which is turned off. But I was just looking at it thinking, that's like extra reflective. Usually you might get like a vague sort of blurry reflection in it, in a computer screen. But like, that is literally like a mirror. It's quite amazing.
Well, I'm glad you shared. Do you know, actually, that reminds me. I did have I was looking at the mirror, looking in the mirror the other day.
The mirror, actual mirror or the newspaper?
Looking at a mirror. You can't really look at a mirror, can you?
You look in the mirror, you don't look at a mirror.
You can't really look at it because all you see is yourself.
You don't, you look in the mirror.
Yeah.
No, you look at it.
No, you don't look at the
mirror.
You don't,
both.
You look in the mirror.
How do you look at a mirror, though? Because you never see the mirror, you see the reflection. No,
you do see the mirror.
Deep.
You know it's a mirror when you're looking at it.
That's true.
Oh, good.
but hold on. What was I going to say? Oh, yeah, so I had an idea for a feature whilst looking in the mirror, or at the mirror, or whatever the f*** I was doing. How we should do a feature called Mirror Moments. Which is like every time you look in a mirror, because I don't know if it's the same for you guys, but every time I look in a mirror, I have I think about something. You know, so I might go, oh, I look fat today. A thought will pop into my head, right? And I wonder whether or not it's the case that we should extract those moments out of people's minds and put them on the show. Mirror Moments.
We could give it a go.
Let's try. You know how I like to do features and then we never do them ever again?
Yeah.
Let's just try it. So this week, every time you look in a mirror, just try and like remember that you're looking in the mirror and think about what you're thinking about and send us a tweet at Kerrang Radio with the hashtag Mirror Moments. I'd love to know what's going on.
But all I'm
going to
be thinking about is, oh, I need this for the Mirror Moments, and I'll just be thinking about Mirror Moments.
No, but you'll have already thought of something before that.
And then think, oh, I should send that in.
So you'll go, oh, my nose ring looks a bit weird today.
Is that interesting?
I'm just interested to know thoughts of the nation.
If I remember, I will write them down.
Yeah, good.
Because I do look in the mirror sometimes.
Well, Kevin, I used to sit opposite you.
Oh, lots of the times,
And there was a studio behind me with a glass-like screen on it,
and there was always dark because no one was ever in there. Massively over-resourced we were in Birmingham when we were there.
Can move for studios.
So many studios. Not like now. But anyway, you know, and because of that, it was like a big mirror. And the amount of time you spend looking at yourself in the mirror.
I'm wondering if I do think about lots of stuff now when I look in the mirror. I can't think. I don't know if I do. I must do.
You'd literally sit there, twiddling your nose ring, just staring in the mirror for like hours at a time.
Maybe I do think about stuff. I'll write it down.
I don't think you do.
Time to start writing some stuff down. Mirror moments.
Huh?